From New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
Hey, welcome to Live from America podcast. This is Hatem alongside me, Noam Dorman, the owner of the Comedy Cellar, best club in the world. And this is Live from America podcast. And if you are listening, you can also watch us at our YouTube channel, which you can see Kate's background. It's awesome. all right. Our good friend and regular of the show and fantasy football expert, comedian Kate Herman is here.
Hello.
Good to see you. Thank you for leaving football for a little bit.
Thanks for having me. I'm having a rough 1 o'clock games anyway, so I could use a distraction.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm killing it. I think I won mine. And our guest of honor is Helen Moses. She is a communication expert and the owner of Speak Up Communication, TEDx speaker coach, and author of Amazon bestseller Voice Unleashed, Speaking Up with Faith and Courage. Hey, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, Kate, you have three stickers behind you. So one is you voted. What's the other two?
Two are for voting, one's for vaccinating.
Oh.
I don't know. I just do it. Every apartment I've lived in has stickers. Because I get home and I just throw them on the thing.
I like the energy.
Before everybody changes
the channel. Because I'm 18 years old.
Podcast, Kate.
What?
I'm teasing you. I'm hot, so let's go.
So, Helen, welcome to the show. That's what he does when he do a joke that bombs. You just move on quickly. I was like, Hatem, okay. Let's go. Let's start like it's my fault. So, Helen, I wanted to start with, the very start. You were a former speech-language pathologist, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
How did that happen? What's funny? I said it wrong.
Yes. Okay.
So how did you change to a communication expert?
Well, speech pathologists are in the field of communication, so it wasn't that big of a leap. But I ended up taking time off from being a full-time speech pathologist to raise my family. And when I was ready to come back to work, I did some part-time jobs and then decided I'd try starting my own business.
And you like in the beginning, you deal with, patients obviously with stroke and all that. So it's kind of like I saw on your website that it says that beautiful quote. It's like you recognize how much voice means and communication and all that. And you wanted to go to that direction.
Yeah.
Question about speech pathology. Actually, sure. Can we talk about that? I know that wasn't the topic, but it's something I've always wondered about. So let me just be clear. A speech pathologist is someone like if my child is having trouble speaking, I would maybe bring them to a speech pathologist. Is that right?
Yeah, that's one area. Speech pathologists cover a variety of areas from
stroke,
infants,
too, right?
And swallowing. Is that what you said?
No, I said strokes. Strokes.
Yeah, people who've had strokes, people have brain injuries, car accidents, and have language and speech impairments. People have voice disorders. Kids who have language and speech issues.
Is autism a part of it? Or
some? Yes. Mm-hmm. That brings up another whole form of what some speech therapists do, and that's helping people with what's called augmentative communication, or just people who can't speak normally, giving them a means to have a voice. And they use that a lot with people who have autism and sometimes people after strokes or brain injuries who just really, the damage to their language skills is so much they can't speak, but they can convey it through a computer of some sort.
So this has always been my question about speech pathology. How do you know, given the fact that with kids, I'm talking about other, I can imagine other scenarios where it doesn't apply, but with kids, since all the adults I know speak, How do you know when it was the treatment which helped them speak, or it's actually just they got older and they started speaking? Like, how do you know that they're not just simultaneously, you know, getting better? This is always a problem in medicine, right? But very specific to speech pathology in my mind, because I've never met anybody. I say, oh, geez, really too bad you can't talk. Somebody should have been a speech pathologist, but everybody manages to speak, right? Now, I guess.
Can I like, take a guess?
Really bad lisp or something, it would be obvious. Yeah, Kate, why don't you answer for her? No, let me.
No, I want to, Kate, give me your guess.
By the way, can you go to speech pathologist to get somebody to not speak so much?
My dad tried that. Didn't work.
Go ahead.
No, I had a friend.
Let her answer first. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to hear. I want to hear what Kate
said.
Okay.
That's what she said. Yeah, Helen told me to talk. Well, no, I just had a friend who, like, when I was in college, he was like, you talk with a smile and you have a labial facial fold or something. And that's something that I guess, like, I never even knew, because I think I can hear everything. But apparently I don't talk correctly at all. So, like, I don't know. I thought with what you were saying, Noam, before you derailed the conversation.
You clench your jaw when you speak.
I can also, before I let Helen answer, I can say a little thing. When I had my surgery, I had oxygen and a lot of tubes inside for a little bit, so I couldn't talk.
He had a heart transplant, let the record show. Go ahead.
So I couldn't talk for a long time. And when I woke up from coma, first of all, they wrote all different languages for me to speak, and wasn't able to speak. And I had the life support for my hands, so I couldn't write. So they had somebody who teach me how to talk again and how to swallow. Swallow was the hardest thing, because mm-hmm. you become a kid again, you can't swallow. So
tell me about it, but go ahead.
Wow. That's big. That's a lot. But yeah, speech therapists come in and that plays.
Yeah, it is comedy show.
is there an issue sometimes where you're not quite sure whether or not nature did it or you did it? That's really what I'm.
Well, you might be referring to stuttering, for example.
Okay.
There are people who have a stutter in childhood that they outgrow. And then there are others who have a stutter that develops in childhood and it doesn't outgrow as they go to speech therapists to learn techniques to help reduce the stutter. So that's one example where they might outgrow it even if they never see a speech therapist.
Joe Biden seems to have started stuttering more as he got older again. No, that's not a joke. That's
no,
true.
No, I know, but I knew you were going to talk about
Joe. Is that common also, that it comes back as you get elderly?
Well, let me just put the caveat out there that when I studied stuttering in graduate school, which I studied the effects of singing on stuttering in graduate school, there was a lot of research that says, it's a neurological thing and there's some things you can do, but stress does tend to aggravate it.
But do you know the singer that can sing without stutter, but when he talks, he stutters?
Yeah, the Mel Tillis was the first one I ever heard of. And then there was one guy on, I don't remember his name, but on American Idol, about, 10, 12 years ago, who stuttered when he spoke and he could sing beautifully. They're actors as well that have been very successful in their careers. It's a different part of the brain that engages.
So in your mind, what Biden is experiencing is not age related, but just stress related.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on, but I would say it could be stress related that's affecting his stutter. That could be true. But that, one thing I will say, just because we're on this topic and I'm a advocate for people who have aphasia and stuttering and other speech and language disorders, that most of the speech and language disorders that we hear are not cognitive impairments. They are just language impairments. And there's a difference. And that's something that as aphasia, which is the loss of language and speech after stroke or brain injury or disease, we're very adamant about. This is a language impairment, not a cognitive deficit or not an intelligence deficit.
It's a terrible affliction. I had a roommate in college who stuttered. Mm-hmm. And I never knew quite how to handle it. Do I finish the sentence for him? Not finish the sentence. But there's this time where you're waiting, and he knows you're waiting, and he knows you're waiting, I used to think he was brave in a sense, even to want to engage in a conversation. I can imagine myself just saying, "Let me just find any excuse not to have to talk to anybody because it's so, embarrassing." Is not that he ought to be embarrassed, but it's just human to be embarrassed, right? So I really feel for these people. It's worse than some other more dangerous things in a sense. It's just a constant, and then they have the stress of trying to talk, and then that, I imagine, that's a vicious cycle, makes the stutter even worse because they're worried about stuttering, right?
Yeah, it can. It really can. And just to say what you just mentioned there, in my experience of talking to people who stutter, the general response is they would rather you not finish their sentence. They want to be able to do it. But sometimes, especially if it's someone you know very well, they can sort of give you a signal. It's okay for you to not finish the sentence like you know what they're going to say, but kind of with a question, like, is the word you were going to say noodles? I mean, I just made that up. But you can do it in a way that's supportive versus condescending.
Yeah, yeah. I felt it out, but I just remember that it was a burden, and I really felt for this guy. But anyway, so that's not what we're here
and
to
it's,
talk about.
And it's very hard for Norm because
John Stossel was a stutterer too. The consumer advocate, and now he's a libertarian guy. He was a stutterer. Go ahead,
Pat. Yeah, no, I'm saying it's very honorable, very hard for Norm because he cannot help but interrupt everybody all the time if you know him. But
it's hard when you have something to say and you have to listen.
So two things I want to, talk to Helen about. One is, communication general, and then also customer service, because there was this video, and I know Norm is very, I worked for Norm for a long time, and he's very big in customer service. So I think it's also, I love that your video about Delta Airline thing about that one questioner, and it's amazing. So if you want to share it with us quickly, and then
Yeah, I was in California. I live in North Carolina. Of course, I had to fly back, and I ended up having to call customer service because I couldn't get the boarding pass on my app on my phone. And the woman helped me, and by the time the conversation was over, I had the pass on my phone, so all was well. But I got this: would you be willing to take a one question survey based on your result, your experience? I said, sure, one question, I can do that. And the question blew my mind and changed the trajectory of the work that I do. The question was, based on your experience with the person who just served you, how likely would you be on a scale of 1 to 5 to hire that person as a customer service representative for your company?
That's a great question.
It's a really great question. And I got to thinking, I was like, oh, I'll give her a 5. And it wasn't just because my app got on the phone and I had access to it. It was because she came across to me as professional and friendly and caring. And that Delta was professional and friendly and caring, not just this woman. And then I realized the only thing I had to go on to make that judgment about her was her voice. I mean, she could have not been able to help me get the boarding pass, and still I would have ranked her as a 5 because she came across as professional and she was able to get me to somebody else who could help me out, right? Or she could have helped me get the boarding pass and she could have been really rude and short and uncaring about the whole thing, and I wouldn't have given her a 5. So that was really, really telling to me that the voice has so much, especially in the realm of customer service, to do with how the person on the other end of the line experiences it.
I'm well known for very good customer service, personally. But, I one of the things is like, it's off topic a little bit, but, being successful in business, and that's one of the things I like, as big as the Comedy Cellar is Norm's response to each and every complaint himself, and he really stressed
most of the time. Sometimes I fall off lately, but I try to. For many years, I've tried to.
Well, lately, awesome. Since I left, I guess, but customers, so it has a lot to do with the voice, and also like people like Kate who performs, right? Like, mm-hmm. like a tone of voice can make a comedian. Like, I think one of the reasons Chappelle is successful is the way his delivery is, the way, it's not only the jokes.
Or Gilbert Gottfried.
And what?
I said, or Gilbert Gottfried. No, totally. I think I have an annoying voice, so that's super helpful in all facets of my life. But
so if we talk about, communication in today's world, effective communication, obviously it's so hard now with like people don't even listen to understand what you're saying. People listen to respond, they're not really listening to you, how do you get any, you communicate, as you mentioned, when we have a little discussion you and me before about you're very passionate about communication across differences, which is, it's very hard because everything is politicalized now and everything is like even little things. So how do you do that?
Well, the how is a big how, and I would say start small. Start small, looking for something you can have in common with somebody else that doesn't agree with you on something big. And that's just the beginning of the bridge. But also in that same regard, you have to kind of shift your agenda. So many of us come to the table to be right, to prove that we're right, to get someone to admit that we're wrong, to change someone else's ideas and opinions. And that agenda is not going to get us anywhere. The agenda needs to be shifted to, let's find something we have in common. And it may start with, well, we both like pizza, or we both like going to the Comedy Cellar, but it then can branch from there to find something that has more about a purpose in common, you know, something we both feel it's important to do to keep people safe from getting hit by cars. I mean, I'm just throwing.
So how do you get people to listen to the message?
You start by listening. You go first to listen.
Okay.
You start.
Me personally?
I'm here to hear you, right? I show up, I'm here, I'd like to hear you. I actually had a woman in our church, there was a big to-do, and a lot of people were leaving the church because they didn't agree with what happened. And she came and asked me, could she just listen to my perspective and not, you know, just listen. And it really struck me. And I shared with her my position and my opinion and my rationale for it. And she ultimately ended up leaving the church, but she was so gracious to listen. And it made me want to understand her side of the story too. So that's where you start. You've got to be the first one to listen.
You feel guilty now? Are you flashing back to those fights we had years ago?
Well, those are necessary.
Yeah. You listening?
Plus, I was listening.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kate. You want to say that? I have a lot of questions. Go ahead, Kate.
Yeah. Just really generally,
Try to move your lips when you talk, if you don't mind.
I know. That's why I should have said to flinch. Something moves your lips.
Maybe instead of a comedian, you should have been a ventriloquist.
I can do it, though.
Yeah, you're born for it. But go ahead.
I can't. I can talk with my mouth closed.
Go ahead.
So I have two questions, Ken. So like when you say language versus cognitive, is it like learning a language as like a kid, like the words, or are you saying it's like mechanics?
Both. It's both. It depends on which part of the brain is affected. Is it the part that affects the motor neurons that are the putting together of the speech sounds? Or is it the part of the brain that affects the finding of the words and assembling them in some kind of an order? Or is it both? Is it a combination?
I think what she meant is that it's not an intellectual. It doesn't mean that you're not smart.
For sure. So like when we're talking about like, say like I'm like, so if I read something that's like from QAnon, say, right? Like the letter, the words are all there. I know that they use like kind of simplistic language, but they put it in an elaborate sentence. So it sounds like very smart and like deep, but it's like very basic language words phrased in a way to make it sound whatever. And then the logic part of it is always like off, but that's more, I guess, would be intuitive. So I'm just like wondering what your thoughts on like communicating where language is being manipulated and like maybe the vocabularies aren't even as strong. And if that's something, do you get what, I don't know what my question is exactly. I'm sorry.
Are you asking if it's
is that like a cognitive thing? Because I know sometimes I read something, I'm like, that doesn't like make
like the power of words,
but it's like the logic, or not the logic, the language of it is like, that's why I was asking about the difference between cognitive and language, like what you meant by language.
Yeah, what I mean by, I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know who, I don't know the person behind the message. I don't know what they're, you know, what's going on with them. But the speech impediments and acquired speech disorders that people have due to brain damage of some sort, if it's just affecting that area of the brain, it's actually on the left hemisphere, that is for speech and language, then that doesn't affect your intellect, that your doesn't change.
No, for sure. I guess I'm asking more like in like a philosophy of language kind of way. Like, is the way that you structure your sentences and use your words therefore going to affect your cognitive side? Like if you don't have a mastery of a language.
No, you don't. If you don't have a mastery of a language, you can still be equally as intelligent as the next person.
Interesting.
So what you're discussing makes me think a little bit about the, now this is not a pro-Trump or an anti-Trump statement. Everybody just calm down. But Trump was skewered for using plain language. They compared him to fourth grade language, blah, blah, blah. And I never got that. He was speaking clearly. Like, what do they want him to just for the sake of using bigger words, use bigger words, like that would make him smarter? And I mean, he's obvious, like his detractors were so giving away their bias because obviously the success of his language is measured in the success he was having by gaining support. So if he's getting all this, he's a politician, he's out there giving speeches. After he gives a speech, his polls are going up. Oh no, listen to the way it's like, well, how could you criticize his way of speaking if it's working? You know, like it was so shallow to me that they just wanted to criticize him. And I kind of, you know, I, whether I agree with him or disagree with him, I just kind of like people who speak plainly. I don't like the
It's not even that you need it to be frilly. It's just the way that you structure it. Like when you're talking to somebody and then they like structure it differently back.
I usually don't like to use big words because I don't know how to pronounce them. But other than that, also, it's good to just be who you are. Like, I think people can see through bullshit. Like I see Noam's point and I agree. It's like he was speaking like he's one of the people, you know what I'm saying? And that's regardless of what the message was, good or bad. But
you're quite a raconteur, Hatem, but I wish you'd be more laconic.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yes, those are some big words. Well played.
I know.
So
what about like communication and cancer culture? Like you want to say a message, you want to communicate, but you're afraid of everything. Every word you're afraid to.
Wait, we were talking about customer service and then Kate brought us back to speech pathology, but I want to ask a question about customer service.
Okay.
And I really want to ask about it because my challenge with my employees in customer service, there's two distinct challenges. One is much harder than the other. One challenge is just dealing with people who just don't have the right personality to be in customer service. They just are never friggin' happy. They're impatient and they will, even if they're saying technically the correct thing they should say, it's obvious from their body language and any kind of emotional intelligence that any customer might have that this person doesn't want to be there. And then my inclination, just get rid of them. They're never going to change, you know, and they don't change. But, you know, I'll give them another chance. That's the easier problem. The harder problem is when you have good employees who are dealing with difficult customers. Mm-hmm. And I feel for them. The customer actually is difficult. The customer is sarcastic. The customer is supercilious. Excuse me.
Racist. The customer is racist.
And of course, from the business point of view, you need the customer service representative to depersonalize it. Just consider themselves almost like a robot and just go for the goal, which is to end this pleasantly and move on. I used to say sometimes to an employee, I say, listen, if you knew that if you could have had that exchange and made it turn out well, you would have gotten $100 bonus. Your motivation would be completely different. At that point, instead of trying to prove you were right, you'd be trying to get the $100 and then everything would come out. No, it's true. Then everything would flow much more easily. You'd be able to just let it go and you'd say things you don't mean and blah, blah, blah. But they're only human. But these are good employees. And I don't know what is the best strategy for getting decent human beings to learn how to deal with difficult customers. What advice can you give us?
Well, difficult customers are just part of the process. So as much as you can do to prepare them for it, that's helpful. Give them some tools how to handle it. I think that some customers, first of all, here's one tool, is just, this is where we are right now in our culture because of, I mean, let's just say because of COVID. I mean, everyone has lost patience. They're tired of things. And the staff to get them what they want is low. Everyone is looking for people to hire. And so wait times are longer. Delivery times of products are longer. Waiting for tickets, whether or not there's a mask mandate. There's just so many things that are ruffling people's nerves these days. So just to, for the customer service people to be aware and just kind of ready, kind of expecting that and recognizing that they are human beings. They're not robots. They're a human being. So this is where that emotional intelligence comes in. They have a reason to feel the way they feel. Everyone, in my opinion, has a reason, a long history of living that leads them to where they are in this moment. And if we can just give them a little bit of grace and try not to take it personally when you're not going to, you're not trying to establish a friendship here, you're just trying to solve a problem, that goes a long way.
It's tough because like you told that story about Delta, but the thing is, I'm sure you were a perfect gentleman, as it were, you know, in the way you dealt with this woman from Delta. So she was able to sincerely have a pleasant interaction with you and help you.
Yeah.
It's nice to be nice to people who are nice, you know.
But
if you were bitchy, forgive me, you know, she might not have been able to.
She might not have, but here's another technique. One thing that I teach people how to do is matching the tone. So except when you have the irate customer, that's the one time you go in the opposite direction. But if they are a little bit frustrated, you can say, wow, yeah, I can see that. And you want to hear them. I get that that's frustrating. Thank you for your patience. A lot of that just reinforcing that.
I mean, we used to also have a good rule. I think it worked in some point is like, you have multiple people dealing with the customer, so the difficult one. So I go talk to them, and once I find myself like, okay, I'm out, I was like, oh, hold on one second, and I call somebody else who's fresh, and then they can, you know.
Yeah, well, this is true. You can play good cop, bad cop. Well, yeah, I know that hot Tim. I know. Forgive me. But isn't there a thing
about like always trying to answer with a yes? So you're always trying to think of like positive outcomes or like in a positive mentality.
Well, yeah, you do. Language. You want to say things positive, but if someone asks about something, is this possible? Well, that is not possible. But here's some other alternatives, you know, that are possible.
Well, I gotta say, like when I worked for someone versus when I owned my own place, I understood the difference between being an employee and like what risk the business owner could have for his own whole life. And business, like the whole thing can collapse with one lawsuit and all that. It gives you a different perspective. So I think a lot of times if people recognize the perspective where this could lead to, you know, I mean, laws has changed as well. Like before you could, you know, push somebody or something. Now you can't even touch somebody, you know, stuff like this. So I think a lot of times the employees need to know, you know, even like the, you know, the sexual comments before that versus now, like all this education, but I think like a lot of times people don't really recognize the danger that they could do to their business by just saying something or doing something. You know, I only recognized that once I was on the other side of it, you know.
With the internet, people are literally Google and reviewing, you know, in the midst of an interchange with the guy outside, you know, complaining about, by the way, what I find that really does work most of all is just to tell somebody who's upset about something. I don't blame you. I'd be angry too.
Yeah, that's great.
I'd be upset too. That works like a charm because then they feel, oh, thank good. Somebody's listening to me, you know?
Exactly. They need to be heard. We go back to what we just started off talking about. Listen first.
Can I tell you a story that actually turned out very beautifully outside? I was outside and I work at it's the Olive Tree Comedy Cellar, you know, and I was outside fighting with this guy. And then there's a big star, David. And he was like, you know what? Fuck you and fuck all the Jews. I was like, a Muslim. So I was
now
like,
we agree on something.
We agree on something. We'll find common play.
Well, I had a thing. You can see it on Google. Somebody complained. And I did something I never do. I mean, 9,990 times out of 10,000, I will never be short on a public answer to a Google comment. But somebody really, I thought they said they don't respect veterans. They wouldn't make an exception for a veteran on the vaccine requirement. And I said, and I wrote back, we respect veterans more than you know, but we cannot make an exception for a veteran. That would mean lying to all the other customers who were there.
Yeah.
Who believe that everybody's
vaccinated. That's because the military doesn't make you invincible.
On a matter of public safety. And I said, I think your criticism is below the belt and you should retract it. That's what I wrote. It really like this outrageous, like we're supposed to make an exception for a veteran and let somebody who might, you know, cause spread COVID or something into the place. What veteran, what kind of patriotism is that? What veteran would want that kind of exception? It makes no sense to me anyway. But other than that, that's the only, it's a
maybe
little
it was
bit,
veteran
right?
for another army. for the opposite. I want to infect everyone.
And they put a 1-star review and it doesn't really, it's not just the review that really matters. It just brings your average down. It's people should stop with this, trying to get even with businesses by trying to hurt them because, you know, something in ordinary happened that they didn't like.
It's very unfortunate.
Yeah. I seem to find just, and then we'll move on about reviews is like, if you go to somebody who have like a bad review in restaurant and search his profile in Yelp, say, or whatever, you find him getting bad reviews to everybody. It seems that person just look for stuff like that. And the person that loves good, like decent people, like me and Norm went for dinner one time and it was like so bad. We're just not going to go back. We're not going to review anything.
It was bad, right?
It was really bad. Yeah. And I've never...
famous place.
Yeah. And I would never go back there again. And I used to be like a regular, but now I never complained. There's people work there. There's people, you know, the owner doesn't know what happened. You know, it's just, it's not their fault. So
well, actually it's funny you say that because I've had bad experiences over and over at this place.
So oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I told
you. You're still going. You're still going.
I still go because it's convenient and, you know, the atmosphere is pleasant and it's not the end of the world to me. But one time I went and it was particularly bad. Like really bad, much worse than what you and I had, Hatem. And I wrote an email to the owner to the place, saying, listen, and they were on top of it. Boy, they got back to me right away. They invited me back. They wanted to give me a free blah, 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 you know. So I didn't take them up on anything free. But, that probably got me to keep going there a little bit. So if you really, you know, want to complain, you should really try complaining to the management first. And then if the management seems to not care, then I guess you could say they have it coming, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to drop the nuclear option first. Why don't you first appeal? Because usually you're right. The owner doesn't know. And usually the owner would be just as mad as you are.
Yeah.
That something bad happened in their business. So it's
always- a lot of my friends own places and they're just like, if they know, it's not going to cost them anything to accommodate that person. I mean, some people are out of line, obviously, but you know, but a lot of times people have a point, you know, they just didn't.
19 out of 20 complaints I get, the customer is right. Maybe more.
Yeah.
Customer's almost, I don't mean in the cliche, the customer is always right. I mean, they actually had something that warranted complaining about. They seldom, you know, do it for nothing.
So Helen, I know that you do a lot of individual and group training. Do you do like customer service? Because I wonder why there's no customer service training like that, like for places like
I do this for companies, for customer service teams and even sales teams, but customer facing teams, how to use your voice in a way that connects you with the customer as opposed to causing a division or a further gap, you know, not making it any worse at minimum, mm-hmm. and having them leave the conversation feeling averagely satisfied at, you know, next best and feeling good at the best. So there are other people that do this kind of training, but I do this for companies as well. Because it's very important. A lot of people just don't think about it. They don't think about how their tone contributes to it. And just the fact of what Noam said, you know, to be able to say to them, if this happened to me, I'd be upset too.
So, you know, is that a matter of hiring or training? Like, should you hire somebody who's like that from the beginning, or is it something that you get with training?
You can get it with training.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Noam was talking about the people that just were not cut out for customer service. You know, they really may not, they're probably not going to be a good fit for that. But there are people that want to give it a try, may not have the best skills at first, but with training, they can learn and do very well in those roles.
You know, I try to hire from people who went to anger management classes and things like that.
Yes.
By the way, if you were allowed to discriminate on the basis of sex, God forbid, would you not care what sex you were hiring for customer service positions, or would you think that one sex might actually be more effective in that position than the other?
Okay. If you could only, like, if you decided you only wanted to hire,
which is my experience, I generally think that on average, not 100%, on average, women are a little bit better at this customer service thing. I tried to remove some of my big guys from the front door of the place and I've been trying to hire women, because I just know that they're just not going to get in fights with customers as much. And the guys are not going to get macho with them. And it just seems smoother to have women handling delicate situations.
Well, I think women over the centuries have been in those nurturing positions more so than men. And so that some of that may come more naturally to women. Women also, just a big plug for women's brains here, we have thicker corpus callosum, that's a singular, so I don't know what the plural is, but the big connective tissue between the two hemispheres, women have bigger ones than men. And so there's more connection between the two brain, the hemispheres. We have access to more readily.
I think
you're not just a sexist.
You're not just, no, I think it's corpuses callosum. Anyway, you're not just a sexist. You're a biological determinist, for goodness sake.
But isn't the men have a bigger brain? Like, I saw that in Borat, the movie.
That's a great resource. I don't, that depends on the thing, but I think.
No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in. Just, you know, yay, women's brains. But I think also just the history that women tend to be more nurturing by nature because of the roles that women have played in society up to this point.
And also, like, I find it, like, when I worked back in the day in at doors of clubs and stuff like that, when you tell a man you're not dressed right for the club or whatever, they take it so personal when you're a guy versus if a lady said, like, oh, you're not, or this, there's not going to be confrontational. You know, they think you're insulting everything that you're saying, but, you know.
I think I'm getting closer to what my original question was now.
Oh, cool.
So, well, no, because of, like, what you're saying and, like, how people handle things, whatever, like, that's, like, the language that you use affects how people are perceiving you. Like, if you say, like, to somebody, do you love me? Or do you say, like, do you hate me? And you're automatically putting in a negative or a positive intonation into their brains. And that's kind of what I was asking with, like, the use of language versus cognitive, is, like, if you have a negative mindset, so you're using your language, and it you could be saying the same thing in two different ways. Do you know what I mean? One has a positive and one has a negative.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the things that I try to teach people, is to think ahead before you speak whenever possible, even if it's just a few seconds before you spit something out.
Would that change your entire mindset if you got used to speaking out loud differently? Would it then start to affect your...
I remember a lot of time
Manny, which is Noam's dad, he was like, when there is a situation heated between the staff and as managers, and when he would say, we'll talk about it tomorrow. So everybody go home and we'll discuss it tomorrow. Then he doesn't show up the next day, but it's okay.
But Kay's actually making, I think, a good point. And I believe what you're saying is true, because I've learned some of this stuff in college, even about psychology, that there's a reverse feedback to it. So if you are forced to speak pleasantly, it will cause you to have a more pleasant mood. There was, you know, and there was some things where they would give, I think it was like some sort of drugs where they would give people, it would give them the physical feeling of being agitated, and they would ask them, how do you feel? They say, I'm angry. And they would come up with reasons why they're angry, but it was really caused by the fact that the physical symptoms happened first and then it worked backwards. So I think there is a conversation going on. So I think that That's right. If you don't permit yourself to use nasty language, but you force yourself to say the same thing in pleasant language, you will probably create a more pleasant mood for yourself.
I totally agree. And the smile, people.
Smile, right.
There is research that shows if you just, you don't feel like it, but you smile, it actually changes biochemically.
Yeah, that's a great example.
And that's one of the things that I was going to mention to you in the communication nowadays with the mask. We're missing a lot of that because a lot of times I smile at people at the grocery store or something just to make sure, you know, that they, and then I realize I'm wearing a mask. They can't even see, I mean, maybe the eyes, but you know, but we're missing a lot of that. So I think we need to make a point that we are smiling or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can even say that behind a mask. Oh, that makes me smile.
Yeah.
But you can see it in the eyes. You can
see it in the eyes.
Yeah. So just, one of your article, you know, you talk about, you know, one article, like you talk about communication a lot, but there's this article that I really like, which it says when to keep your mouth closed, you know, which is, I think it's a lot of people need to know about more than anything else.
Yeah, there are times when that is the most effective form of communication, to just be silent and keep your mouth closed. There are sometimes when tensions are high and, you know, if you've had a really bad day and maybe you've got something pent up, if you can wait a little bit longer, it can diffuse a little bit and you might not say something that you will regret later to cause damage to relationships. Sometimes it's just not the place to say what's really on your mind. And it's wise to think a little. I'm an extrovert and I like to think out loud and process out loud and hear my voice and hopefully somebody else is in the room, but if there's not, I'll still talk out loud to think. But there is an advantage that introverts have over extroverts in that taking more time to just think through. And it really doesn't take that much time. You'd think it might take 5 seconds. You can do it in less than a second to just think enough, or just take that 1 second to take a breath and smile and then come through. And remember, everybody has bad days. You never know what's going on behind the person or behind the mask. You never know behind that customer service rep's day, behind the customer who's calling in, behind their day, the person you see on the street, that customer in the restaurant or the wait staff in the you never know.
Yeah.
And we can never know. So as much as we can to just recognize when the time may not be right, if you feel like, oh, this doesn't feel like maybe the right time, it probably isn't.
I think also another point we talk about is like social media and technology is making people, like I read this study about like Alexa, like the kids don't say please anymore, you know? Because they don't learn these things. They just play this, do that, you know? So a lot of times with the communication through emails or texts or something like that, like it's better if you pick up the phone and just call or talk, you know?
Yeah. But it's that seems like slow and old and outdated, right?
Yeah.
To pick up the phone, but it's actually becoming a better tech. Like it's a fresh way to communicate, pick up the phone and actually call somebody. It might be a communication advantage for you at this point, but like, just to your point about the kids and Alexa and those kinds of things, please and thank you still go a very, very long way.
Yeah.
By the way, Hatem, you have such a good idea. You should sell it. You should make money. They should have a manners mode where Alexa will only respond if you say, please, you know, a certain key.
That's a good
I like it.
That's such a good idea. And the kids would have to say, please. And it would actually,
I like it.
Yeah.
Somebody do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you should just find out who to tell to do. It's such a good idea.
It really is.
Because I see a lot of the kids do that, you know, and they're just like, they just not used to. And, you know, I don't know.
If this happens someday, I know you're going to say that you thought of it.
Yeah.
But I want to be on record that no, I thought of it. you said something that triggered it, but no, I thought of it. But go ahead.
You just put it in the right English language. Manners mode. I like that. Manners mode.
I love that idea.
It sounds easy. So when you see people like when Mike Bloomberg was running for president and he can't even talk in public, do you guys like, why don't you hire me? Like, don't you like be like, he's a billionaire.
I know I do see some speakers who speak in public, and I think, you know, I could really help you, but I also could not really want to help some of them. So there's some of them I would not volunteer to help. But yeah, I do hear people that don't speak as eloquently as I think they could. And I don't mean that everyone needs to be an eloquent speaker. I like what Noam was said earlier. You know, people respond to people they can relate to. Yeah. And if you use language and terms that they resonate with and they understand, then you're much more likely to connect. We're talking about difference here again, connecting across differences. You know, if you talk in PhD language to someone who doesn't have a college education, you're going to miss. Yeah. It's like the tone matching of a customer service conversation. You've got one person that's talking like this and another person that's just not caring and not meeting them and not understanding what they're really trying to say. So you've got to find that common denominator language.
What would you say is the communication mistake that you see politicians most often making? If there is.
Well, I know this is a tactic that politicians are taught to do, but what drives me completely crazy is when they don't answer the question that was asked.
I'm with you. I don't understand why. I think they shoot themselves in the foot.
I'd rather them say, I don't want to answer that question.
Yeah. Next. To Noam's credit, he said it so many times, and he, I think, got his point to that, is that the person that asking the question should stress them to answer that question. It's the problem.
It's hard with important politicians to do that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it just feels manipulative. Like, that's like manipulative language.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does feel that way. That's my biggest pet peeve. Just answer the question.
So to my earlier question, communication, like you want to communicate and you want to be honest, but you know, you're afraid of cancel culture and all that, and the language you can use, you can things that cannot use, things that you grew up using and you can't say it anymore, even if it's if you think that doesn't, you know, you grew up that it doesn't hurt anybody, and now it's so what's your advice? Is like, should you just be updated with everything, or should you be careful or know your crowd?
Yes, be careful. Yes, know your crowd. If you're going to speak to an audience that's very different than you are, then learn more about them and what might be offensive to them and what might not. I have a 16-year-old daughter who's very up on helping me understand when I use terms that are no longer appropriate, according to her. So I rely on her quite a bit to keep me current. But we can't possibly know it all, and we can't possibly not offend anybody when we speak. I mean, somebody could be offended by me saying we can't offend anybody. We can't not offend anybody when we speak. Someone could be offended by that.
Yeah.
So we just have to do the best we can, know our audience as much as possible, and really seek to learn. To when we learn that something we've been saying is offensive to a particular group.
But when you train somebody communication wise, like don't you think that the people can see, like when we say politicians can be, they're choosing the word, they're not being honest, versus somebody like Trump, who didn't choose his word, just said whatever, and he got more closer to some people, you know, by doing that, versus people like, oh, I'm choosing my words, I'm speaking in a very, you know, and people can see that he's not honest, or she's not honest, right?
Well, I think honesty aside, because people can be dishonest whether they speak plainly or with a high level of vocabulary and very carefully chosen. People can be dishonest or honest either way, but the people will relate to different things. Some people are going to be drawn to that very careful, very eloquent speech, and others are going to be drawn to that very plain, very colloquial type of speech.
Do you know about like the Brian Laundrie, Gabby Petito thing?
I know a little bit about it. Yeah.
So there was like that cop video that came out where Brian Laundrie's talking to the police and he's like super calm and like measured, and you know, and I just find it so interesting, like how in like situations where they're both in the same situation, but like, you know, one knows how to like control their breath maybe, or like, I'm just like wondering like what factors it into, if that's like part of, like if you get like, because then I'm thinking like, well, yeah, like sometimes if I get flustered, like even like right now, and I'm like, I don't exactly know how to like phrase it. You know what I mean? And like he obviously would handle this much differently.
Some people probably more naturally better at breathing and slowing down and carefully deciding what they want to say and deliberately trying to convey a certain emotion or lack of emotion and as they speak, whereas others are just in that moment and they're going to have a harder time not showing emotion. Does that come close to what you were asking?
Well, yeah, I guess it is. It's like it's using like language and tone and volume or like all of it to like convey.
Yeah.
Whatever. And like, I guess my question is like, yeah, is that like something that's like in like somebody's brain? Like, is that their person? Would it be personality? Would it be like sociopathy sometimes? Would it be?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what causes that one person to be better at that than another, but you know, it's kind of like what causes one person to be a better mountain
like if I wanted to learn
another.
To not be so much of like an Odie
or it's like too late.
A, wow yeah or like more of like a princess like from Garfield you know
yeah so, people can learn it it's absolutely possible to learn it
so Helen tell us about the other side of you sometimes you go and complain or cause problem or start a fight
when do I cause a fight when yeah. do I start a fight
or like complain or something. Someone when you're not communication expert.
When I'm not a communication expert.
And you're like, you know what? Enough is enough.
Yeah. What do I, where do I draw the line?
Yeah.
Right? Can't stand it. I want to have more fun in my life. This has been really great. I've had a lot of fun today. So I try not to take myself so seriously some of the time. And I like goofing around and being silly. And I have, you know, my college friends, we get together and still are silly and we joke around and, but they're, you know, we have language based jokes because we all like language based jokes and that sort of thing. But things that ruffle my feathers are, you know, people that won't answer the question, whether they're a politician or not. People that, that's not just the people, but I don't know. I'm on this quest to try to understand people better. So I do take that in a serious way, but I like cats. I have two kids.
Are you married?
I am married. I've been married for 24 years.
Does your husband ever say to you, stop with that goddamn communication strategy and just tell me, speak to me plainly.
No, but he used to tell me that, not that he hasn't said that exactly. Yeah. But what he did tell me when we were first married was stop using that teacher voice with me.
Yeah.
Teacher voice is such a real thing.
Yeah. And I had many occasions early on that I really wanted to use it.
So a lot of
we got to go, Hatem. I have one more question. This artwork over your shoulder, is that your logo? Is that just in your, are you in your living room? Or is that
I'm in my office. The artwork is something that the woman I hired to help me design the office found. It's got brand colors in it, but it's not my logo.
It's very just, nice. Are they birds or is it just abstract?
It's abstract. They could be birds. They're birds to you, like, Noam.
What's that?
They're birds for you. They're
birds for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I have a question. Will you show us a funny face?
Yes.
All right. So communication now is also like, do you teach? You teach a lot of like TEDx talk. You coach that public speaking, all that. But is it different communication that you teach for online classes? Like, there's a lot of like the new Zoom things, the online, social media, all that. That's communication as well. Is that
sure something that you are? Yeah, I do more of the Zoom kind of training. So I help people know to look at the webcam as opposed to look somewhere else when they're talking. And I help them with presentations online and how to stay engaging and how to keep people engaged, because it's harder when you're not in person and everyone's distracted by all the stuff around their computer. So I have started switching into that. And I do virtual trainings now as well as in person. Used to be just in person, but now all of my one-on-one coaching is virtual, and half of my corporate training is virtual as well.
Do you ever like somebody go and is like, hey, I want to be, better at public speaking, and you're like, nah, it's not working. It's not gonna happen.
I say that to them.
Yeah. I mean, that's communication. How do you communicate that somebody's awful?
You I wouldn't say it that way. Mm-hmm. I would give them the most encouragement I had to get through that one particular presentation that they have. I don't know. I would if they said, should I get this job as a public speaker, I would say, well, you might find that could be very frustrating for you.
That's the kind of thing that would anger a husband if you're having a heart to heart.
Yeah. I mean, my family, they're like, oh, mom, my kids are like, oh, good grief. Cause I'm always about, communication. Yeah. I'd probably say that way too many times for their taste.
Well, there is, I know we have to go, but there is, what I was touching on is real, because depending on the level of the relationship, it can be taken as being manipulative, and it can be angering when you know somebody is softening in as a strategy in the way they're talking to you. Anytime I know somebody's being strategic in the way they're communicating with me, I get like, just say what you want to say,
Exactly. And that learning how to just be specific, be brief, be clear, be concise. That is a really important skill, because I have people in my family, they're just like, just tell me, don't be passive aggressive with me. Don't try to beat around the bush. Don't tell me. And I think men are much more concrete. If we're going to go into general differences between male and female communication, men are much more concrete and specific, and they use language to get a point, to make a point, to instill action. They there's a reason why they're saying what they're saying, and women are more just talking, just to talk, just to communicate, just to
we call it yapping when you're not around.
I've been known to yap. Helen, there is a difference.
And if you're a delightful guest, I have to thank you, because it's my mother-in-law's birthday.
And Helen, it's 1 year anniversary for your book. And if you want to share information, where people can find you, or your website, all that. Thank you so much. You were great.
That'd be great. You can find me at my website, which is helenmoses.com. Pretty easy. And you can see my social media buttons there to connect with me on social media. And you can also see about my book. You can find it on Amazon. The audiobook just came out too. So that's pretty exciting. If you like to listen, it's available on Audible and iTunes. It's called Voice Unleashed, Speaking Up with Faith and Courage. And my email is on the website, so just reach out and contact me that way as well.
Hatem, which do you understand less, a book or a reading or audio?
Why am I always the?
I'm using Kate's negative.
Well, you make the study. You see how he's communicating with me after all this 1 hour of communication, and he's still communicating like this. Unbelievable.
I have to go. This is a terrific, terrific show. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, Kate. Do you want to share your information, Kate?
Yeah, I'm at Scratch the Cat on Instagram.
Do you have any final question, Kate, as a comedian for communication on stage or anything like that? Or because I thought that would something be. Do you coach?
Well, yeah. What do you find? What do you find comedians?
Helen,
do I coach comedians?
Yeah.
I not to be funnier, but
yeah. No, I'm talking about stage communication.
Yeah. I mean, if one wants to hire me, yes, of course. I'm not sure that I have coached. Actually, that's not true. I have a friend and comedian. I've coached some a little bit. So, and that's fun. Those sessions are really fun. So I would love to coach more comedians. What was your question, Kate?
Well, no, I guess in terms of like tone, sound, does that like matter to like what you find funny?
I find funny?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love puns, and I love plays on words, and I love, any kind of language.
Oh my God, I have a joke for you. Do you want to hear it?
I'm ready.
This is one of the first ones I ever wrote. It's so terrible and dumb, but.
Okay, great. I'll probably love it.
It goes, whenever I hear a cat call on the street, I just turn away and keep walking. I really can't afford another cat right now. Because you like cats. And so do
I. Yes, cat people love cats.
That's not part of my act anymore.
Okay, all right.
We should all hope so.
We could work on the delivery, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to do it on Zoom. I hate Zoom comedy. We're after.
Yeah, I love being back with an audience. This summer, I got to present in person again for the first time in, since pre-COVID. And oh my gosh, the energy from the room.
Yeah.
Was incredible. I was like, oh, I missed this so much.
Yeah. I have zero adrenaline after that bit.
But I like
I like the adrenaline rush that people are.
Yes. Yes, it's good. It's good.
Well, guys, thank you so much. That was great. And if you want to communicate with us, live from America at comedyseller.com, you can email us, complain about Norm or anything. it'll be great communication. Well, guys, that was Helen. It was very nice to meet you. Kate, great to see you. Thank you guys so much. And we'll see you next time soon, hopefully.
Sounds good.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.